So welcome at this time. Next couple of days we'll have guided meditation practice. But just before we begin today, I'll say a few words just about practice. And yeah, you're welcome to listen however way you see fit. The first day of retreat, first full day, is not invariably, but quite often, kind of body and mind acclimating to the silence and stillness, and just a lot of energies coming through the body and mind in one way or another. And so there's kind of pulls of energy where it's maybe restless or maybe sleepy. Pulls of desire where it's maybe approach as in sense desire or avoid as in aversion or ill will. And sometimes there's a state of kind of confusion or bewilderment or doubt. And mostly your job on the first day of retreat is not to come to any conclusions about your life. Yeah, that's my main instruction. Yeah, nor about the future of humanity. So just let whatever conclusions you reach, just hold them lightly. Yeah, and keep going. Basically, we do our best with whatever is offered in the field of our experience. We do our best with whatever is offered, and we try to meet what's arising with as much skillfulness as we can. And so what in the last retreat, it happened just last week here, the theme was the hindrances that I just named, those poles of energy, of desire, of doubt, and that those, we sort of paired those with heart qualities as kind of ways of meeting sense desire and ill will and sleep. Kind of haziness or rigidity, sleepiness, restlessness and doubt. And so we'll do our best. Yeah. And it's not to say that, this will be your experience. Sometimes for whatever reason on the very first day, something gets very still in our heart. So it's not predictable. We don't know where insight is coming from. And we're just sort of like doing what we can to make the field fertile for understanding and love. And so settling into a posture that feels sustainable. all the loose ends of a human life. Way they never all get tied up. But we just resolve to tolerate complexities, the loose ends of being human. And rather than finding solutions, kind of top down, thinking through solutions, fixing our life, we're letting wisdom, compassion bubble up from below. Just sensing in, it may not be at all, but sensing in, just see if there's any fear or bracing. Any questions about your own ability to be here, to do this, to practice profitably. And if there is any fear, hold it with love. Maybe if it feels right. Just taking some slower, fuller breaths, breaths that reach into your belly, breaths you can feel broadly across your body, a kind of ripple of sensation, relaxation, maybe discernible on your exhalation. All the efforts that we've forever been making to guide and steer and mold our life, to shape ourselves and our futures. It's okay to put all of that down. We begin to gather the attention around the sensations of breathing. Often useful to find a place where your breath is most accessible, the mouth or nostrils, your chest or your belly. Maybe your whole body. Sometimes can be helpful to notice the precise moment when your inhalation begins and ends. Precise moment when your exhalation begins and ends. And so you're noticing four distinct points with each cycle of breath. And so we draw a line around the sensations of the breath. And within that circle, this is a focus space. And just for this first part of the retreat, we'll treat everything outside of that, everything outside of the focus space, as a kind of false alarm. The movement of your mind, of your attention into thinking, is utterly innocent, quite natural for us to survey the landscape of threat and opportunity. And yet, we treat all other phenomena not with aversion, but as Ajahn Brahm said, the thoughts Like the phone ringing, but you know it's not for you. And so we become more and more intimate, the sensations of breathing. remember the metrics of success are neither the pleasantness of experience or the silence of the discursive auditory thinking. There are many, many things already going right just in you being here, just in us practicing together. Just keep letting go into your breath. Sometimes at the bottom of the exhalation, there's a point where we lose the thread of connection to our breathing. And sometimes we're building some measure of stability, can breathe in and breathe out, and at the bottom of the exhale, just gently move the attention to your hands. And then back to your breath as the inhale begins. And silently in your own mind, may be useful to note those points. The beginning and end of the inhale, beginning and end of the exhale. You might silently just note those 1, 2, 3, 4. Or simply just in, out. In these last few minutes, just invite you to consider the possibility that this path, unfolding of it, depends on love. Not really possible to open to our lives in the absence of love. The love that I'm pointing to is not some huge feeling, not some geyser of feeling. It's very quiet. It's a kind of softening. It's what allows the difficulties of being human to soften rather than harden our hearts. It's good to practice with you. Some of the spirit of retreat is that we build a sense of continuity of awareness. And so that in a sense we're really studying the way that suffering gets built. And it often gets built under the radar of our awareness. It gets built in habits that hide out in unconsciousness. And so we actually build some sense of continuity of awareness such that, as Sayadaw Tejaniya said, like, when we read a book, we don't just read the even-numbered chapters. Yeah, we're reading all the way through. And likewise, in our practice, we want to see where our mind goes when it thinks it's unsupervised. Does that make sense? Because it goes to where it thinks its home is. But it's not actually a home. And so we want to see this. And this is why we build a kind of rhythm of sitting and walking and awareness through transitions and and so Max is going to say something about our walking practice here.
As Matthew was saying, you know, if there is a goal to retreat practice, or if we want to think in terms of goals, I think probably one of the least harmful goals would be to cultivate a continuity of awareness, you know, throughout the day. And this works against the idea that, you know, the real practice is here on the cushion or in the hall, you know, with the breath, and, you know, and then it's like, you know, to hear the bell ring, it's like, you know, and then I just kind of go make a cup of tea and, until the bell rings again. I remember one early retreat I sat at the San Francisco Zen Center, and there they have shorter walking periods, but every time there was a walking period, something, I would, or break, I would rush to my car and just sit in my car. Just, you know, not that it was that private or anything, but just to have a little break, a little space, something. And so, but here we want to not be efforting so much that it feels like we're like pushing, and then it's like, but to just have something steady, a steady, ordinary awareness, so that when the bell rings, maybe we stretch our legs or, you know, shake out our legs if they've fallen asleep. But it's done in awareness. You know, we're aware of what we're doing. We're still with the body. We stand up. And we're still present. We're still here. We walk out. And often there'll be, if you look at the schedule, there'll be a walking period after a sitting, between sittings. And these are wonderful opportunities to just keep this continuity going. And, you know, the Buddha in the classical teachings talked about the four postures that are equally suitable, equally wonderful for cultivating awareness, mindfulness. And those are sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. You know, so it's kind of covers everything. I guess it cover swimming, I guess, but that's good too. And I was very interested to learn that in the classical texts of the monks and nuns, the stories of their awakenings, by far most of them happen during walking meditation as opposed to sitting meditation. And my understanding of that is that walking is a kind of ordinary activity, you know, and by cultivating awareness in this activity that we do all the time, we can, it's easier and maybe in a way to let go of ourselves, to kind of let go of some sense of self-consciousness. We're just walking, we're just there. Whereas sitting, you know, most of us don't like to sit this way. Well, sometimes I do on the computer stuff, but it's like, there's still a sense of I'm doing it, you know, that needs to get sort of worn down. But walking, we all know how to walk. And by just infusing the awareness into the walking, wonderful things can happen. And this rhythm of going between sitting and stillness and then walking, we can kind of tune the energy. So if you're feeling very tired in a sit, maybe do a little bit of faster walking. You know, open the eyes wide and just bring up the energy. On the other hand, if we're feeling very settled and very calm, maybe we want to do a little slower walking and really just be there in the sensations of walking. So just to give a little bit of the kind of nuts and bolts of how I approach the walking meditation. I try to imagine, try to bring the mind into the feet and the legs. And it's like our feet become sponges and they're just absorbing the sensations of walking. You know, one step. And for the purposes of walking meditation, it's helpful to sort of find a path. And it might be, you know, something like either the width of this room or the length. Some, you know, could be outside, could be, you know, wherever. But you find a place where we can walk back and forth. And so we start at one end, bring the mind into the body, into the feet, and then just start our walking. We get to the end of our path, stop, turn around, and walk back. When I notice that my mind has gone off somewhere, you know, thoughts will come, and as long as we're sort of connected to the walking, that's fine. I keep going. But if I notice that I'm totally off somewhere else, when I notice that, I just stop and I stand there, path, and then just reconnect to the body, to the feet, and then continue the walking. So, in terms of speed, you know, Gil likes to say something, I don't know if he still says it, but at some point he was saying something like, to walk at the speed of mindfulness. You know, and that's very nice because it's like I was saying, if we're really calm and settled and still, it's going to be natural to walk quite slowly. You might see on retreats or especially longer retreats, people really slow down and sometimes they even break down the steps of, you know, when I was taught walking meditation, you would kind of label lifting, moving, placing. Lifting, moving, placing. You know, it's very slow and it can we can really get concentrated that way. But it should be, I think, ideally at the speed of whatever our awareness is. So if we're really settled and it feels natural, sure, slow down and kind of get into it for a little while and just get absorbed in the sensations of walking. But sometimes we'll be a little more stirred up or a little more, the mind feels busy and it will feel more natural to walk maybe at a more ordinary pace or maybe even a little bit faster. Saida Upandita, who was a great Burmese meditation master, he would do this power walking before he'd sat, you know? And so he was also in his 90s, so when I sat with him. But I would encourage you to really give the walking a chance and you know, and find a way that it's enjoyable, because it really can be very, very nourishing. And then that supports the sitting. You know? And so many times on retreat, I've had a sitting and I feel discouraged, or I just feel, ugh. And then I'll go outside and walk around, do my walking meditation. And then I come back and it's like a total reset. It's like, what was that? You know, it's like, it feels so different. So it's a great counterbalance to the sitting. And maybe the final thing I'll mention is, in some part of the day, it can be very nice, very interesting to take a chunk of the schedule, like a sit. What I like to do is a sit, a walk, and a sit. And just tell myself, this is one thing. You know, so, you know, yes, we have to go to the bathroom sometimes and do this, or we get thirsty, or we want to stretch or do something, and that's okay. But if we can keep that continuity through a sit, a walk, and a sit, that's very good. And it's very interesting. And you may see that, wow, that second sitting feels very different, to have that sort of chunk of time as one thing. It's the continuity. The image I have for continuity of mindfulness, continuity of awareness, is like a pot, a big pot, like the kind we use to make pasta or oatmeal or something. And, you know, it takes a while for one of these really big stainless steel pots filled with water to boil. And it needs this continuity of the flame. You know, when we make breakfast in the morning, you know, there's a bunch of different things to do, and you know, if we filled up the pot and then turned on the flame and then look at it, they were like, oh, I have to go make the coffee. Turn off the flame, go make the coffee, come back. Oh yeah, the oatmeal. Turn it on and turn on the flame again. So, oh, I have to heat up the prunes. Turn it off. Go get the prunes. You know, it doesn't work. And so, you know, in this image, the steady flame, the steady heat is our awareness, is this quality of presence, of just being with, being open, awake, connected to what's happening. And that continuity of that is what builds the heat. My teacher used to talk about stop and go mindfulness. You know, and if that's what we're all in, stop and go mind, you know, kind of like we're there, we're with the breath, and then we kind of, oh yeah, the breath, come back. So we're always leaving and coming back, always leaving and coming back. But over time, it's like that continuity will expand, and will start to grow. There'll be more time that there can be this contact of the heat of our awareness, just melting whatever is blocking us, whatever obstacles are in the heart, in the mind. So, just enjoy the walking and be creative and listen to your body and what's needed. So thank you.